Oh boy, you're live, it says. What's up, everyone? Aaron Negler here with Cheesehead TV, coming to you live on Tuesday afternoon. It is 7 p.m. in the Eastern, so I guess that's evening, not really afternoon. And what's up? What's up, everybody in the comments? Good to see everybody. Big Daddy Cool Breeze. Big Daddy Cool Breeze is here. It's always good to see. Big B, what's up? You're not really blocked. Just having a little fun. Joy the Jaguar, always good to see you guys. The regulars representing. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something right now. You all sitting around your computer, your phone, your tablet, whatever, what have you. And even those of you listening later, maybe you can't catch it live. I understand. The time shifts every day because, you know, I got work I got to do. But you guys are the diehards. It is June, whatever the hell it is, what, 15th? And you're here with me talking Packers, listening to Packers chat, like whatever you're doing in the depths, the bowels, if you will, of the off season. Yet here you are representing. You're my people. Like, you know, the season will come and the numbers will swell and everyone will be excited. Maybe if there's a season, who knows, with COVID-19. But provided there are games played, we'll all be tweeting about it. We'll be chatting about it. We'll do post-game stuff. And people have opinions. And you know what? Their opinions, those Johnny-come-latelys, those people that show up in September and go, oh, yeah, I'm a diehard Packers fan. I don't care about those people. You're my people. You're the people I care about. The people here at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday in June talking Packers, those are my people. What's up? Good to see everybody. Travis, excellent question. Start us off. Sharp, Lofton, Hudson. Do you agree with that order? No, I do not. I think Sharp is the greatest football player I've ever witnessed play on a football field. And I would put him second behind Don Hudson for everything Hudson accomplished, his dominance of his era. And I understand people who say, oh, he was playing against the milkman, etc., blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, they didn't play as many games, etc. But this idea that if Hudson were alive today or afforded the opportunities that a Sterling Sharp had or a James Lofton had, that he wouldn't be privy to, say, the same training methods, the same number of games, the same opportunities, etc. The man dominated in his era in a way no one has, not even Jerry Rice. I mean, Jerry Rice obviously is in the record books. He had a lot more games. Much, much, much more liberal passing rules that helped him. And obviously he played with two fantastic Hall of Fame quarterbacks. That all helps him. Don Hudson did it regardless of who was throwing him the football, who was lining up against him. That man dominated his entire era. So I'm always going to give Hudson the nod there. Sterling Sharp second, and then Lofton. And Lofton was, don't get me wrong, he was no joke. It's just compared to those two. Yeah, I don't think there's much of a competition there. Part of the daily routine. Thanks. Thank you, Lucas. Thanks for checking it out, buddy. Carry the G in June. That's what I'm talking about, Kevin. Hey, speaking of which, and I know I've inundated your social, but I got to keep it up. This week on the new Teespring merch that we got, 10% off, DAD2020 is what you want to do. Promo code DAD2020, get 10% off all of our new merch. It's tons of great stuff, including Carry the G t-shirts, hoodies, etc. Somebody this morning, God bless whoever this is, ordered a Carry the G sweatshirt and t-shirt at like 3:40 in the morning. So I don't know if that's like waking up for the early shift or you're just going to bed because you're drunk, but whichever it was, thank you so much. We appreciate it here at Cheesehead TV. What does Jair need to do to be the best cornerback in the league? Bryson, excellent question. Be a little bit more consistent, not jump on stuff underneath so readily, and don't take the bait when teams target him in that regard. It's funny because when you look at the All-22, there are times when you can clearly tell teams are going after his tendencies. It's not even like they're not going to go after him because he's so talented. But there are plays that, especially when they're playing zone or some kind of man match, where they know he's going to bite up or he's going to take false steps because he's so aggressive. And that's, of course, a good thing in the sense that you love his aggressiveness. You love how he is see ball, get ball. He will let guys know that he's there, so to speak. But that does work against him from time to time. And he just has to recognize when it's time to be aggressive, when it's time to try and jump that route, and when it's when it's time to lay back, so to speak. Now, for the most part, like I said, the upside is there. His aggressiveness serves him well, but every once in a while it gets him into trouble. And to me, he just has to be a little bit more consistent. And if that happens, look out, because I'm with you. I think he can be one of, if not the best corner in the league. Like, subscribe, and share. Help carry the G. Thank you so much. Very, very, very much appreciated. Sean, thank you for the super chat. Can we get back to talking about how great the crowd was against Seattle? We got home field. We walked to the Super Bowl. No one sits in section 111. Sean, that is a very good point. And it's something that I was talking with one of the Packers scouts leading up to that game. I got called out by some gambling dude on FS1 whose name totally escapes me. But he was like, put your money where your mouth is. But I was just saying, like, there's no way they lose in Lambeau. After what we saw all year, they're not losing in Lambeau, especially against that Seattle team. And lo and behold, they did win. Now, I didn't bet. I got mouths to feed. I got kids. Like, if I lose that money, please. I'm a responsible adult. Forgive me. But I felt very strongly that they were not losing in Lambeau Field against that team. And I am with you. That crowd was insane that night. They were so great. I was just watching that game the other night. It's Game Pass makes it easy because it's one of the very, like, I think it's the third game available if you're on the home page as far as rewatch the last season, because it was a divisional round game. The crowd was insane. And if the Packers can get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, I think they have a very good shot. Now, you don't have to look much further than the Eagles game last year to know that that's no given. But given the crowd, the energy, the way the team seems to have reclaimed Lambeau, yeah, I think there's a good shot. If they get home field, they will be in the Super Bowl. Now, a lot of ball game left to get there. JJ9000, thank you so much for the super chat. Two observations regarding the Gray press availability. One, what an amazing question and answer about his pick six at Lambeau. Oh, thank you very much. And two, he's here because he still believes in Rodgers, one hell of an endorsement. I mean, that man's probably been tormented by Aaron Rodgers for the last couple of years more than anybody. So I get it. And look, there's clearly something that happened in Minnesota in regards to whether it was the talent or lack thereof that he was given to work with in Minnesota. Maybe the team really believes in Trey Waynes and Xavier Rhodes, and he doesn't. I don't know. I have no idea what transpired between him and Mike Zimmer, but there's clearly something there. You just don't have to look much further than Zimmer's the season-ending press availability where he was asked about it. And I mean, his demeanor there tells you everything I think you need to know about that relationship kind of deteriorating for whatever reason over the last year or so. But I'm with you. I think it's a huge get for the Packers. I loved his answers. I loved his answer to my question about that pick six. And look, man, Jerry Gray is a name I've known for a very long time because of that game. That Rams defense was no joke. Of course, the Packers weren't very good. They had Randy Wright at quarterback, Lindy Infante's first year at the helm. That was the opener. And, you know, I remember that play. I remember it distinctly, just sitting there watching the Rams break my heart. And it was so great to hear him talk about not only that play and what led to it. And it was so great because I expected – I think it's fans, and this is, I'm not just talking me or I'm not putting anybody down, but I think fans always think, oh, Randy Wright, like, quarterback sucks. I mean, I did, but he didn't even talk about the quarterback one time in that answer. It was all about the scheme, the offense, how they utilize the wide receivers, how the wide receivers line up, what routes they run from that alignment, and that's how he knew. Like, that's the shit I love. And then for him to turn that around totally organically and talk about how that informs how he teaches his guys today as a coach, love it. Absolutely love it. Dustin, thanks for the super chat. We signed Snacks or Jordy yet? Nope. Love Jordy being on the radio the other day talking about, oh, I would have come back, but the Packers didn't want me back. Trying to make some more headlines there for Jason Wilde, but I understand why the Packers moved on. I understand why the Packers didn't welcome him back last year. I know tons of Packers fans would disagree with that assessment, but look, Jordy Nelson being on the team or not being on the team last year did not keep him from the Super Bowl. And that pretty much tells you all you need to know. Steve, thanks for the super chat. Salud, brother. Thank you so much. Oh, great question, Arthur. What's the second best stadium, Lambeau? First, obviously, that you've been to in terms of atmosphere, crowd, etc. In my opinion, it's Heinz or Gillette. Heinz is great. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did, but man, I got there early, and the river, the steamboat that delivers fans there, like that whole vibe is just great. And then, of course, there's the casino there. Yeah, that whole vibe is great. I'd put it up in the top three, definitely. Arrowhead's always a favorite, clearly. You know, I think those two are probably the two I like the most outside of Lambeau. Will Darius Shepherd be ready this year? Talent is there. Patrick, I tell you what, you know, he did get his shot last year, didn't produce in the regular season. I think a lot of people have forgotten about him and or counted him out. I am not going to completely do that, but it is a big long shot for him to make this team. You know, obviously he's a different body type, different kind of receiver than they usually have in Green Bay. But yeah, I'll be surprised if he sticks. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, what sort of reputational cost is there to Goody if he misses with AJ Dillon? Taking a running back high is already risky, but doing so and not hitting seems real bad, assuming Love works out. If Love works out, none of it matters. I mean, A.J. Dillon, yeah, a reputational hit. Please, like, he's not taking that already with his 2018 draft. The people who worry about the general manager's reputation are nerds like us, you know. The vast majority of fans could give a shit as long as you win on Sunday, you know. And, yes, does it color the perception of maybe Gutekunst, the franchise, their direction, where they're headed, etc.? Yeah, a little bit, sure. But ultimately, especially if he hits on Jordan Love, nothing else matters in that draft. I mean, everything else is gravy. Everything else is a bonus. I mean, that's how big that move is. I mean, now Jordan Love doesn't hit, he'll be out of the job, so it won't matter. That's why it colors that entire draft class, you know? Now, would it be great if he hit on both? Sign me up. It's like Ted Thompson hitting on Aaron Rodgers and Nick Collins. I'd be down with that. But obviously, a lot of ball game left there. Point taken. I'm just, you know, I understand your question. The question is one of people who would gather at Tuesday night at 7:14 in June. You know, you and I, we care about, you know, the perception and the reputation, etc. Gutekunst really doesn't care. And I've talked to him about this. You know, he knows the chatter goes on, etc. He is so divorced from all of that. He's going to make his selections. He's going to build his team the way he wants to do it. He doesn't care what people are saying. He certainly doesn't care what the internet or PFF have to say about it. And I kind of admire that. I mean, I've talked about it here. I was very surprised they took a running back in the second. I think that was very against their usual MO, actually. But it's clearly a guy they like. You heard draft night after he got drafted. I can't remember who the scout was who spoke, but they've been tracking him literally since his freshman year. They love him, and they wanted him on their squad, and they made sure that happened. We'll see how it works out. Do diehard fans drive the needle at all for decision makers such as GMs or owners, or is the general public drive more pressure? Yeah, it does. I mean, I think for the most part, not a ton. I don't think any of those factions drive much in regards to decision making with an NFL team. I do think public pressure is a real thing that gets to some owners more than others. I don't think most GMs pay attention to it. You know, they're lifelong coaches and or, you know, lifelong football people. We really don't pay attention to a lot of, if any of that. But owners certainly are swayed and or informed by it. I think it's naive to say they are. Nicholas, thanks for the super chat. What do you think a Matt Flynn era would have looked like under McCarthy? Say Aaron didn't fall to us in the draft. I think it would have been scary. I think they would have lost a lot of games. Mike McCarthy would have been fired. I love that Detroit game. Love that he got paid, but he's not a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I think his time in Seattle proved that. Dustin, thanks for the super chat. Everyone forgets about Nick Collins in 2005. Barring injury, Ted found Hall of Famers on both sides of the ball in the first two rounds. Baller. Very much agreed. Very much agreed. I mean, talk about a 1-2 punch in your first ever draft. I mean, Gutekunst, unfortunately, has Jair, which is great. And the rest of that draft is really hard to look at. But yes, Ted knocked it out of the fucking park with those first two picks. And what I love about the Nick Collins pick is, like, I'll never forget people talking about a small school guy, way overdrafted. Sound familiar? He would have been available so much later. Sound familiar? And then all Nick Collins did was come in and ball out. Down with it. Sean, thanks so much for the super chat. I'm surprised there hasn't been any sign Johnny Jolly talk yet. In fact, I'm starting it now. Sign Johnny Jolly. I'm down with that. Hold on, guys. Sun's setting. I'm going to give myself some light here. David, thank you for the super chat. Here's to the Packers nerds in this chat. Go Pack Go. I'm down with that, man. David. Hill and Montgomery is the duo your girlfriend tells you not to worry about. That's bold, man. I said today, though, what was it on trivia? Anybody who was there, Perry and I held it down a little while ago on trivia. It's just going to be so depressing watching Ty Montgomery just go ham with Sean Payton calling plays because you know it's going to happen. I can't wait to hate it. Simon Pink, hi. How are you? Jolly and Raji reunion. Dave, I'm down with that. Sign Cletus Hunt. There we go. Now we've got a movement. Big Daddy Cool Breeze is behind it, so you know it's good. Oh, David, very much agreed and endorsed this comment. Everyone should check out Andy Herman's Pack-A-Day for the 12 points on Jordan Love. It was great. I very, very much concur. Very much worth your time. You saw Andy, if you follow him on Twitter, putting up a bunch of Jordan Love clips from college. You followed that up with a special Pack-A-Day, just looking at Jordan Love's game, and it was fantastic. Very much agree. Such depth at guard and running back. Can't remember the last time we saw this kind of competition. Ross, very good point, especially the interior of the line in general. And then at running back, you've got a number of bodies. You've got to think the top three are pretty solid. Throw in Tyler Irvin, if you want to call him a running back. He's kind of a slash player, but yeah. And then, of course, there's Dexter Williams, who got to think is a long shot to make the roster, but he'll probably be given opportunities. So it'll be fun to watch it play out. And then you look at the interior of the line. It'll be interesting. I saw, you know, there's obviously that injury in Philadelphia. We'll see if maybe the Packers get a call. Maybe Philly goes fishing for a guard. I know their initial reaction will be to try, you know, keep in-house, utilize their own guys, etc. But you never know. How much depth at linebacker, both outside and inside? Jake, great question. Outside, you got the Smiths. And then you look at Gary, who is expected to make and has to make a pretty big jump. After that, there's some undrafted guys I like. There's a guy whose name I can never remember how to pronounce, so I'm not going to butcher it here. But there is some opportunity there at the fourth spot, no doubt about it. Inside is where things get interesting because obviously a lot is going to be expected of Kirksey. He was signed to be that guy, to take the role from Blake Martinez. He's going to have the radio in his helmet, so he is the guy. After that, does Oren Burks step up? Does Curtis Bolton return from injury and pick up where he left off? Because I thought he had a really promising summer last year. Kamal Martin, the fourth-round pick, or is a fifth-round pick from Minnesota, I love his tape. I do worry about some of the bigger interior guys getting up on him, but I think it's going to be a real kind of trial and error test as they go early on in the season to try and find the guy they like the best along the interior to pair with Kirksey. And don't discount that three safety look. I think Raven Green is going to be down in the box a bunch. I think they'll utilize Chandon Sullivan a little bit in that role, depending on the personnel package across the way on the offense. So I think you're going to see a pretty decent rotation there. Kirksey is going to be the one kind of constant. And if he can just regain the form that we saw that is available to you to see on tape prior to his injuries, he's a pretty damn good linebacker. I'm not going to sit here and say he was a superstar or he was even trending that way. But damn, he's a pretty damn good player prior to his injury. And I hope he recaptures that form, because if he can, you know, pick that up and give the Packers just that, they'll be in a pretty damn good spot. Sean, thanks for the super chat. Gary likes to use his strength in bull rush. Can he learn more finesse rush styles? You know, if there's anyone who can teach it to him, it's Mike Smith, the outside linebackers coach. He's had a really successful track record of making guys into something. Did a great job in that regard in Kansas City for a number of years. Obviously, he's really good friends with Mike Pettine. Mike Pettine trusts him implicitly. And I am very excited to see what year two brings. And don't look any further than the clip. I think it's on my Facebook page, but it might be on the YouTube page as well, of Mike Smith, you know, basically going to bat for the selection of Rashawn Gary after so many people criticizing the pick. He absolutely loves Gary, and he has staked, a decent part of his reputation on the fact that he thinks he's going to be very, 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 very good. So I would think that it would behoove him to ensure that Gary does have a wide selection available to him in his toolbox, and to give him something a little bit more than power. Because I think you're right. He definitely counted on that a lot when he was on the field last year. Now, and I say this, and this is a broken record at this point, but the only way he improves, the only way he expands that toolbox is if he plays. He's got to be on the field. The coaching staff has got to get him on the field in 2020. Because everything he does in practice, whatever he does in camp, that's all well and good. Even preseason games, that's great. It doesn't mean anything unless he's on the field when it counts, playing live games that matter and improving week to week. That's what's got to happen. Love me some Jamal Williams. I do as well, Big B. How about Jake Ryan coming back for depth at inside linebacker? No. If Rodgers balls out and wins the MVP either this year or next year, what happens with Love? I don't think much of anything, actually. That's the crazy part. We'll see. I mean, if Rodgers balls out, wins MVP, and they win a Super Bowl, say, not this year, but next year, maybe the conversation gets interesting. But I don't think it much matters. I think Love is their guy, and that is Gutekunst's guy. And if they win a Super Bowl, who's to say Rodgers doesn't retire? You know, he's going to be reaching close to 40. And I know he said he wants to play past 40, but you never know how these guys are going to change their minds, maybe, et cetera. I think the future is clearly Jordan Love. They're going to want to get him on the field sooner rather than later, especially if Rodgers is falling off a little bit. Now, if he balls out, wins MVP, say, 2 years in a row, and they don't win the Super Bowl, then things get interesting. I still think they probably try and push for Love to get on the field. Probably trade Rodgers for a King's Ransom. Or probably wouldn't even be a King's Ransom. Probably be like a second-round pick. But I think they want to, you know, get that transition going in a couple years. That's just guesswork on my part. But there would be no greater problem to have at 1265 Lombardi than, oh, geez, we've got this two-year MVP sitting here, and we've got a first-round quarterback who all of a sudden we don't know what to do with. Maybe they trade him. Love him. Maybe that happens. But that, I think, is the probably least likely thing to happen. So much ballgame left to play in that regard. Do I think Aaron Jones takes a hometown discount next year? Met him last year, and he's such a humble dude. Gotta believe he will. I know that's the thing we hope for as fans, right? But it's a business, and he's got people who look out for his interests in that regard. And I would be shocked if he gave a quote-unquote hometown discount. Now, that said, it is a question of value and where he fits in the marketplace. And I don't think there's anybody who would sit here and say, oh, we see an Ezekiel Elliott or girly type back. That's just physically. However, we certainly see a guy who has produced when given the opportunity at the level of a Christian McCaffrey. You know, now he splits time, unlike Christian McCaffrey, and Aaron Jones has stayed healthy all of one season. These are all, you know, back and forth things that they'll be talking about in negotiations. But to me, I think Jones recognizes the opportunity he has in this offense with Aaron Rodgers, put up a couple, you know, more years of really good stats, and then maybe during the transition to Jordan Love and or AJ Dillon, they allow him to hit the market in 2 years if they give him a couple years extension and allow him to put up some huge numbers and then hit the market and try and hit it big. Now, who knows? So much to play out. Injury always comes into play. And that, to me, is the A number one thing he needs to do, stay on the field. But will he give him a hometown discount, so to speak? I don't know if it's that as much as he will understand that he is so perfectly suited for this offense that he will give them a shorter extension, fewer number of years, in hopes of hitting the market after putting up a couple more years of big numbers. That's my guess. That's total guesswork on my part, but that's where I think it is. Ooh, who is my dark horse Super Bowl pick from the AFC pre-camp? You know, every year I go with the Chargers, and every year they screw me, so I'm not going with them anymore. Give me the Titans. You know, I know they were in the playoffs last year. They beat the Patriots, so there's not really a dark horse, but I don't think a lot of people are talking about them as Super Bowl contenders, and I think they are. I think they very, very much are. I think Vrabel's a really damn good young coach. And obviously, the offense is of a certain type, and it's not exactly what most NFL offenses, how most NFL offenses are built in the modern era, but they're damn effective, and they've got a good, really disciplined defense. So I think they're going to win a lot of games, and you get in the dance and anything can happen. So give me them. If Jair Alexander or Kevin King get hurt, can our secondary depth hold up as starters? John, excellent question. You know, you're going to be throwing guys like Chandon Sullivan or Kadar Holman into the mix, and they clearly have determined that those guys are ready to take the step. Now, these are the tough determinations that you have to make, you know, as a GM, as a personnel guy. And given what I saw from Chandon and Kadar last year, I think, yeah, they could hold up. But it's a gamble. There's no doubt about it, especially when you got Tremont Williams sitting out there, still unsigned. I tend to think, as I've said here, I think Tremont will get a call if there's an injury. But, you know, in the time being, those guys are good. Ryan Belaga, Iowa. Oh, boy. People are talking about my dog. That's my cue to go. Can't thank you guys enough for hanging out. Please hit like, hit subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family. Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide, especially those of you who chill out for a half hour on a Tuesday night in June talking Packers. Can't thank you guys enough for hanging out. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good night. Go Pack Go.